Announcements are a frequent kind of speech we're called upon to give, and we do it badly. One of the themes of this course is that whatever we do, we should do expertly. The main thing about announcements is they should be brief as possible. People don't want to sit through things that don't pertain to them or that take three times as long to be said as required. So make sure you've got something to say. Otherwise, don't say it. When you step up to speak, if you're making an announcement, if it's worth doing, then it's worth doing. Don't sort of timidly half get up to say something and kind of say it so that five or seven of the 25 people there hear you. If it's worth saying, decide on it, get up, get people's attention, and when you've got their attention, speak it out clearly, boldly, and swiftly. That's an announcement. It's not a sales pitch. It's not a long, drawn-out explanation of the background of what went into it and how we finally reached the decision. It's an announcement. The time of this meeting has been changed from this time to that time. Everybody has to do this. Everybody has to do that. Whatever it is, make it clear, and make it brief. That's how you keep people's attention. That's how you get your point across. Any questions?
At times, don't you have to give some explanation?
Not much. Then it's not an announcement.
So in other words, an announcement may be mixed with the information.
Announcement means quick. You're announcing something, an event. Or the cancellation of an event. You don't have to tell the whole story. If people want the whole story, they can come see you afterwards. Any questions? If so, please see me after the meeting. Or see me in my office at 10:30. Not everybody doesn't want to sit through your big, long explanation of what happened and what happened after that.
Was Kate Domina's famous one an announcement?
That was a little more than an announcement. That was a sales pitch. This morning announcement. That was a deliberate pitch. It wasn't an announcement. The donations can be placed here. It was a pitch. So that's a little bit different. And for the purpose, I suppose he took the right amount of time and went about it the right way. Although he might have tended to drag on a little bit there on the end. And he could have benefited by having taken this course and knowing when to stop the clipped ending. Yes.
I told Nina Bandukha who yesterday, I appreciated his announcements very much because they were clear, concise, and very tastefully done. Would you agree?
Yeah, especially since he's under threat that if the morning announcements go more than 5 minutes, I'm going to stop them.
I didn't know that.
We've got a cooperative relationship. You're all under the threat. If any of your announcements go more than a minute or 2 minutes, then you'll see my ugly form appearing in your memory. That will obstruct your going back to Godhead, those of you who want to go. So keep your announcements short.
Someone does walk along for far longer than is necessary. Is it appropriate to get up and to ask if you just might be correct?
That depends who you are. If you're the temple president, if you're the person in charge, it's quite appropriate to say, Prabhu, thank you very much. Vrindaya Tulsi Devi, quite all right. If you're his disciple, keep your mouth shut and your mind taut. Depends who you are. Sometimes you just have to sit through this stuff. Most of us, in fact, have no alternative but to sit through these announcements while they eat up our japa time. Realize that when you're giving these announcements, you're eating people's time and they're annoyed with you. They want to hear only essential facts presented swiftly, clearly, thus. That's an effective announcement.
In 1977, in Los Angeles, Senator Maharaj was very able to duck out on the string of prayers to avoid...
Just to skip the announcements, sure.
Half hour.
Oh, I did it too in Los Angeles. For years it went on inexcusably. Avoid picky questions. That means if people start asking you, well, what if this, or some of us have this or that, or I've got this or that, say, see me later. Don't waste everybody's time answering all the exceptional cases and all the what if, or I thought, or this or that. you made your announcement, case has been clearly thought out, it's all established, settled, done with. Any questions? Come see me personally. Don't waste 500 people's time answering one man's question.
What if they do have a question you think you could, you know, would be of interest?
If someone really raised something that was important and you didn't think about it, like AM or PM, then by all means, take the cue and say, PM, you didn't get your message across and he's helping you. But if it's really a special case, let it be special and deal with it specially. For this talk, it's good to have notes, to know what time, where, when. Other talks, no, but this one, yes, because it's just the facts. And so if you have the facts right in front of you, the way Keshi Damana does in the morning, he does quite a good job of it. He knows what verse, he knows what speaker, he's not trusting his memory, he reads it out. No one expects him to give a big, impressive talk. He does a great job. Do it that way. Okay. Awards. Awards includes not only awards, but votes of thanks, announcements of appreciation, announcements of donations that people give, praise, big scores. When you do that, keep in mind your purpose. It's to honor the person, to give thanks to the person, to give him a chance perhaps to express his thanks. This one also is a short one. Everyone takes sort of pleasure in expressing gratitude to someone who's done something nice, but they take that pleasure real briefly. That feeling of pleasure runs out real fast. You know, I'll be with you for a couple minutes while you praise Arjun Das for his contribution to the Institute or whatever it may be. But if you go on and on and on about it, you spoil that pleasure. These announcements, these awards should be quick, brief, sincere, and factual. Don't overpraise. The worst thing you can do when you offer thanks or an award. Now we'd like to thank one of the greatest devotees for his tireless efforts. He's worked on and on and on. Don't do it. Brief, simple, to the point, honest, factual, and sincere. And if you accept thanks, if you accept some gift with thanks or some award or expression of appreciation, then that's half the time. As short as the presentation is, your acceptance should be half as short. Real brief, if anything. Don't burden us. I'd like to thank this person and that person. Without this person, it wouldn't have been possible. And actually, I had to work for weeks and this happened and that. Don't. That's not what you're there for. They're expressing your thanks. You're expressing your appreciation for their thanks. In most cases, that's all that's needed. Any questions?
Another question, but there's a comment that very often we overpraise with the instruments. If we're congratulating someone.
One point Bhakti Charumaj has made several times. This clapping is not the Vaishnava style of expressing appreciation. It's just not in our tradition. It's Western, and in some occasions it may be appropriate at the World Congress and so on. But generally in our temples when we're announcing this or that, applause is not the usual way Vaishnavas express appreciation. They chant Hare Krishna, or they chant Jai, or they Mridanga and Kartals make a nice sound, but not usually by clapping. That's something from the etiquette course. And it should be appropriate. If somebody did something really tremendous, you can have a tremendous sound. Otherwise, that the temple collected 800 rupees today, you should pull out your handkerchiefs and weep. Don't. Doesn't deserve a big drum roll and 20 minutes of jais if the temple collected 800 rupees. Pull out your handkerchiefs. It should have been 5,000. And make it appropriate. If somebody did something nice, good. Okay. This is deliberately short. That's the essence of the talk, too. Make it short, make it short, and make it short. Some quick grammar. Or it's not really grammar, it's diction today. You got some sheets that summarize things that we've gone over in previous classes. And I'll try to have a second sheet with things that we've gone over or will go over since that one. Pomposity, or love of the long word. Keep your words short too. Your speech is short and your words short. Individual. Five individuals did this and that. Unless you really want to point out how individual they were. If you had one Islamic general and two Hindu beggars and three call girls and four this and that, then they're really individuals. Otherwise, they're just people or devotees or what have you. Similarly, phenomenons, events, happenings, phenomenon. There's a tendency to exhibit this exhibit. That's another one. It means show. He had a tendency to exhibit the phenomenon of anger. It means he got angry, or he gets angry fast. Don't pile up your big words. It's not required. It doesn't help. It gets in the way. Another one, interface with. It means meet. This person, I want Vasudev to interface with Arjun. It means you want him to meet. Keep your words short. Don't show your postgraduate education. It's not impressive. It's not effective. It's clutter. Make your words plain, simple, and clear. Any questions? Yes?
That's fallout from the computer world.
Yeah, interface is actually a very good word. It takes a very complicated concept and makes it simple by talking about things like faces. So you're going to take a printer and you're going to put it together with a computer and hook them up according to various rules and regulations, and they're going to work together. So instead of saying something as complicated as that, you say you're going to interface them, get them face to face. That's a very sweet little coinage. But when you take it and turn it backwards, having taken the face and brought the human world into the computer world, then you bring the computer world back to talk about human affairs, it's really needless. Human beings don't need to interface. They already meet together. They already make friends. They already discuss and talk. They don't need interfaces.
Or networking.
Or networking. We don't need to network with one another. We just need to get together. All this garbage that's brought in from the computer world, it's great for computers. It really helps you talk. But we don't need to computerize interpersonal, that is to say, human affairs. Two more. Clichés and fad words. These are a little different from pomposity, which is what the former ones were examples of. Clichés. These come from too much reading of Time magazine, generally speaking. Workaholic. Workaholic must have been really funny the first time someone wrote it. It was very clever. Now it's sad. It's overworked, overused, not at all amusing. It's just dead. Workaholic. This is what happens to words. They're used humorously one time, and then everyone else just picks them up. Instead of saying something innovative or clever himself, he just borrows someone else's cleverness, and it's unimpressive. Another word that, yes?
What would be a replacement for that workaholic?
Person who works too hard. Or a muda. Or work addict. Make up your own word, combination of words. Work addicts, no one has used that. Workaholic, it's just not funny after a while. Another one, lifestyle. This word is just overused. It's a fad word, the Krishna conscious lifestyle. A lifestyle, generally speaking, means the fashion in which one leads one's life. It's a very California sort of word. The surfing lifestyle, this lifestyle, that modern lifestyle. It's not at all appropriate to a serious, disciplined way of life representing a tradition of thousands of years. Krishna conscious way of life is quite respectable, or life of Krishna consciousness, or Krishna conscious life. This style means mode, fashion. So don't be lifestyle-ish. When Satsuru Maharaj heard some of the tapes from our previous semester, he very much appreciated that I criticized this. He said, I thought it was a one-man campaign. I'm glad to see there's someone else who hates it. Avoid lifestyle. It singes the ears. Any question about it? Anyone who's addicted to lifestyle? Okay. I've got some more, but I'll save them. Now, another fight today? Ready? Okay. We saved this from our class on standards of the Bhagavatam class. We're trying to set some standards. But here was one I couldn't give a judgment on. Instead, I've made a debate question out of it. Should women be allowed to give class? For those in favor of the proposition, there's the quotation found on the handout. Please continue giving continue your devotional service, and you could also keep giving Bhagavatam class if you like. Women in our movement can also preach very nicely. Actually, male and female bodies, these are just outward designations. Lord Chaitanya said that whether one is Brahman or whatever he may be, if he knows the science of Krishna, then he is to be accepted as guru. So one who gives class must read and study regularly and study the purport and realize it. Don't add anything or concoct anything, then he can preach very nicely. The qualification for leading class is how much one understands about Krishna and surrendering to the process, not whether one is male or female. Of course, women, generally speaking, are less intelligent. Better, I think it must mean, but if she has heard nicely, then she will speak nicely. And if those from that advocating that women should speak want more ammunition, there's the following letter from 1968 to Jai Govinda. Regarding lecturing by women devotees, I have informed you that in the service of the Lord there is no distinction of caste or creed, color or sex. In the Bhagavad Gita, the Lord especially mentions that even a woman who has taken seriously is also destined to reach him. We require a person who is in the knowledge of Krishna. That is the only qualification of a person speaking. It doesn't matter what he is. Materially, a woman may be less intelligent than a man, but spiritually there is no such distinction, because spiritually everyone is pure soul. In the absolute plane, there is no such gradation of higher and lower. If a woman can lecture nicely and to the point, we should hear her carefully. That is our philosophy. But if a man can speak better than a woman, the man should be given first preference. But even though a woman is less intelligent, a sincere soul should be given proper chance to speak, because we want so many preachers, both men and women. Well, these are two quotations supporting the idea that women should be allowed to give class. I'll ask you to break up into four groups again and debate this question. Should the women be allowed to give regular Bhagavatam classes?
Yes. Is there no quotes against?
Well, I don't have any. Does anyone else? Someone have any quotes against? One person did last semester, but it was bogus. Well, there was an argument last time.
Based on a book, like.
Hmm?
Based on books.
Based on books, but, well, I can tell you what some of the arguments were if you want. You want some arguments to start off with?
No, that's not fair.
That's not fair, huh? Well, of course, I did some research. I came up with, I supported one side, so I can support the other side. Some of the arguments against, well, I won't even bother. I'll just give Indradumna the other side. Then you'll get lots of arguments. There'll be no shortage.
I'll debate with Vegaman.
Okay, this is fair. Well, Vegaman's in favor. Women should be allowed to give class. Maharaj is against. Don't let him speak.
What happens if
I'm
not convinced
of his point?
No.
Of this point?
Well, my point.
That doesn't matter.
Come to my side.
Oh, that doesn't matter. You don't have to be. I'm not looking for you to support a point that you believe in.
I'm just looking for you to give good arguments or winning arguments. I don't even care if they're good. Knock out the opposition and support your own point. Should we do it in two like this?
Yeah, just sit right here.
Should we then give another team a chance?
Yeah.
After that?
We'll go for an hour or two and do something else.
I was going to duck out and do some banking, but I think I don't want to miss this.
I won't be. I'll just take a normal position of this thing out.
Leave the dhamma somewhere else.
Adi Raj Prabhu?
Can other people also challenge?
Run in? Maybe we'll leave. No, let the two fight it out. Let the two fight it out, and then if anyone wants to challenge the contestants at the end or ask questions, we'll allow that and let's see how it can get cross examined. Hmm.
Okay.
You want to sit down?
Sit down.
They're taking off their jackets first, you know.
Getting into the mood. I'd like to propose, first of all, that Prabhupada's letters often give instruction according to time and circumstance, a relevant instruction to a particular devotee, and we can't always take extract a letter from Prabhupada's books and give that as Prabhupada's absolute instruction, but rather we should have to refer to Shastra, we have to refer to Prabhupada's books. And although in Prabhupada's books there's not a definite statement on this particular point, whether a woman should give class or not, we can understand from our philosophy that it's not the position for women to address an assembly of men. Being disciples of Srila Prabhupada, and Prabhupada put down the laws for society and philosophy for 10,000 years, it's not a Prabhupada book. How can we say Shastra for us means Prabhupada books? So what are you basing on? Something that is not given to us by the spiritual master?
I'm basing it on statements. It's like Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said that for a one who's aspiring on the path of transcendental life, to see the form of a woman will agitate the mind. So, in the Vedic scheme, there's four ashrams, and three of those ashrams are based on renunciation, and one of those ashrams allows association with women. So I'm not saying that some men cannot associate with women, but in general, the rule of renunciation applies, that there's restricted association. So for a brahmachari or sannyasi to have to see a woman giving class for 45 minutes or even 1 hour, despite the fact that she may be Krishna conscious, that I'm not denying. Vidya vinaya sampane brahmani gavihashtani. Ultimately, we see the soul within the body, but for preaching purposes and for social association, we have to make a distinction. Otherwise, how will we hear the philosophy? We have to look at the form of a woman for 1 hour. Instead of hearing, the mind will become agitated. We won't hear before.
That's a good point.
That's the main point. Renunciation is a very important principle in advancing a spiritual life.
Although in the letters that we've heard, Prabhupada didn't at all address that point.
Oh, here it is.
And he didn't, you mentioned before that it was a specific letters to specific devotees. We can't take it as a general rule, but actually, these are letters to specific devotees, true. But he doesn't say, you can do it or you cannot do it. It's actually a general principle that he propounds here. That if they've heard nicely, it doesn't matter whether female or not, male, then she can speak nicely. So it is a problem, yes, but Prabhupada has made a society where women and men mix. So we're going to have to live with it, that's all. But
how do they mix? Let's see how they mix. Men and women mix in the Grihastha ashram. They don't mix publicly.
Oh,
the Srimad Bhagavatam class is a very public place. They may mix, but you never see a sannyasi or a brahmachari speaking with or hearing from a woman. So why should we think that the brahmachari or sannyasi has to sit in front of a woman while they speak for 1 hour?
So then why are we expecting that a woman should be subjected to a brahmachari and a sannyasi and a grihastha man doing lecture to them for an hour?
So why are you subjecting them to that temptation?
That you have to address all the great acharyas, like Ramanujacharya, Madhvacharya, Shankacharya, because in their times, and even in Prabhupada's time, they allowed that to go on. I defer the question to these great saintly acharyas.
So then I defer the question to these letters by Srila Prabhupada, where he says it's allowed.
Well, I'm not saying that women cannot preach, but I'm saying that if a woman wants to preach, let her give Bhagavatam class to the ladies. Just like in this, referring this letter to Malati. Malati was practically full-time a Sangatan devotee. She was constantly traveling in the 1973, 74, 75. She was traveling and she had her Sangatan party. So let her speak to the women. But as far as preaching to the men, we can't accept this. We're not, actually, I'd like to say that we're not, our position on women, we're not condemning women as a whole, but rather we're simply recognizing the nature of material life. That it's stated that the basic principle of material existence is this association between men and women based on this attraction which ties together the hearts of the male and the female. One becomes attracted to his body, to his home, to his children, to all the paraphernalia. So this is the basic principle, the sex life. And what does the sex life mean? Sex life is stated in the Vedic Shastras to be keli, or joking, prakasha, or glancing, shankalpa, wanting sex life, adjavashaya, endeavoring for it, and kriya nishpeti, or union. So one of the aspects of sex life, not only just having the act of sex, is thinking about it, desiring it, or specifically it's mentioned, prakasha, glancing. So if you're going to ask our brahmacharis to break the rules illicit sex by having to glance upon a woman while she's giving a Bhagavatam class or any other activity, that we can't accept.
But the point is, then we wouldn't have a preaching movement. Because the brahmacharis go out and they distribute books to the women and they suddenly glance at them, they even touch them, there's so many things. What about in Bhagavatam class? You're not touching, you maybe look, that's true. That's one thing we have to be very aware of, so everyone should be told that.
Well, let's clarify,
listen to what Prabhupada says. Let's just listen to what Prabhupada says. He says, I informed you, regarding the lecturing by women divorced, I informed you that in the service of the Lord there's no distinction. So in the service of Krishna for spreading this movement, we have to take certain risks. We cannot just lock ourselves in somewhere. We have to take certain... This is a risk, I agree. But it certainly is a risk that Prabhupada was prepared to take. And here's the evidence. You have three letters here, and I don't want to read the whole thing to you, but it's right here.
You say for preaching purposes.
And as far as I can see, you have not given one single statement by Prabhupada against it.
For preaching...
Therefore, it falls.
For preaching purposes, we have to make distinction. We hold the view, vidya vinaya sampane brahmani gavihashtani, we hold the view that everyone is spiritual. But if we simply go into the forest and say, my dear tiger, you are my brother, let me embrace you, this is suicide. So in the same way, if we don't hold a distinction, this is man and this is woman, then we simply take the woman's association without discrimination, then we'll be liable to fall down.
That's true.
So when we go on Sangatan, we have to make a distinction. And actually by going on Sangatan, we're not going to take association, we're going to give association. So in that way, a brahmachari has, there's limited association. Prabhupada said, in the nature of service, one may have to have some small exchange.
Aren't you mixing?
Very limited. So on Sangatan, yes, we go to give association, but we don't go to take association. So to sit for 1 hour and hear a woman's realizations on Krishna consciousness, which are generally not as deep or profound as a man's, would mean... improper association. Even if she was speaking Krishna conscious philosophy, we cannot say the audience, the brahmacharis, are Krishna conscious enough to transcend that level. Oh, she's spirit soul, let me hear her realizations. Brahmachari life means student life, it's the beginning. So his mind may fall into hearing and seeing, oh, this is the woman, he'll forget the whole lecture. We see it's hard enough for the devotees to concentrate anyway on the lecture. What to speak about if a woman is giving.
So you're using the word association a little differently as you move along the argument. Association here, that if someone is giving a lecture, she's actually giving you association of the Supreme Lord, not herself. She's giving the association of the Supreme Lord as presented in the Shastra. And there's no
let
way
her give association it. In the proper time and circumstance. Vedic life allows for these things. We're not saying no association. We're not saying... They can't preach, but we're saying let them preach in the proper circumstances. Just like we don't see in the kitchen men and women mingling together, brahmacharis and women mingling together cooking. We don't see men, brahmacharis and women living together. We don't see brahmacharis and women walking together. So why should we have to apply the same principle in the Bhagavatam class, which is the most, one of the most important parts of the day? Why should we allow it to take place there?
Because it is not, the woman is not in the center. It's, what is in the center here is the Srimad Bhagavatam.
That may affect, that is not, but you have to take
it is association with
you have woman. To take into consideration the audience also.
That's true.
The audience is not made up of paramahansas. The audience is made up of conditioned souls.
We've already discussed that. It's true. But, and there is a risk. Every step in this material world is a risk, and as long as we have material consciousness, there's certainly a risk every second. But this is a risk which I'm just again stressing, that Prabhupada here is obviously prepared to take. And how can you argue against it? If Srila Prabhupada here obviously takes that risk, and you're saying no, you're going against something. You're stopping the preaching movement.
My point is that Prabhupada's letters cannot, can often be taken out of context.
No, they're not.
Because if I go through Prabhupada's letters, I can probably also find a letter in which Prabhupada will say that brahmachari should not associate with women. In fact, if you want a Shastric reference in Prabhupada's purports, there's many references to where brahmachari should not have association with women.
True, but so, I'm saying this is not association with women, this is association with the Bhagavatam. Are you, when you're sitting up giving lectures, is that your association we're getting, or is it the Bhagavatam association? So when a woman sits there, then it's suddenly the woman's association. Why?
Because that's the way the Vedic culture is set up, renunciation.
Vedic culture doesn't change association because of sex. You are giving us association to the Supreme Lord when you're sitting there.
Yes, of course it is. Of course it is. I apply the same principle again as a sannyasi. That because I'm a sannyasi, that means that according to your strategy, that I should just have any type of association with women at all.
No.
So I'm saying we should go all the way. We should follow the injunction of the Vedic of the principle of renunciation all the way, also within Bhagavatam class.
All right. So we accept that. Then what happens? What is the consequence? That means there should be no women in the temple at all. Or alternatively, they should live in another temple, separate, only women. That's what it means, because being in a temple means you certainly going to see the women when you lecture, you're going to see them in arti, you're going to hear them sing, you're going to have so many ways that you call association. So to take the consequence of what you're actually saying means you simply have to remove the women from the men and the men from the women, separate temples.
Well, we're talking about class.
That's right.
The rules have been set up in Vedic culture. How much association can be there?
But that's not Prabhupada's rules. That's what I'm saying. You may quote as much scripture as you
like. You're taking one letter of Srila Prabhupada.
No, I'm taking three right here.
Three letters of Srila Prabhupada.
That's right.
And there's many references within the Prabhupada's books how brahmacharya should not have association with women. So glancing and hearing, Lord Chaitanya said even to hear the voice of a woman is a subtle fall down.
Let me ask you a question.
Even to hear the voice of a woman is a subtle fall down for one in who is aspiring for spiritual life. So answer that question.
Yes.
Answer that question. Ask how the sannyasi and the brahmachari can sit in the audience and hear the voice of a woman and not have not consider that to be a subtle form.
Okay. So the general principle we understand from the Vedic point of view. Now,
answer my question.
I will answer the question. Here Srila Prabhupada is giving three specific letters saying that a woman can lecture in our temples. You cannot give me one single evidence where Prabhupada says that a woman cannot give lecture. You can give general examples that a woman and a man should not associate. True, we accept that. Here Prabhupada has given three very, very specific examples where he says women can certainly lecture because if, on the condition that they are knowledgeable. But give me one example where Prabhupada says they can't.
I'm saying these letters
are meant to
encourage devotees under particular time and circumstances. And we did not see, generally when Prabhupada was here, that this activity went on.
This means that
while Prabhupada was here, on a few occasions, women did give lectures. But as a principle, Prabhupada did not encourage
them. All right, so
this is the problem. These letters were printed. Devotees are taking out of context one, two, or three specific letters. But if we see the general way Prabhupada ran things when he was here, present amongst us, we don't see women lecturing specifically Prabhupada's.
No, we don't do it because we're not following the orders.
We can offer a compromise that perhaps under certain circumstances it can take place, but as a general rule it should not take place.
Let me just present this case to you. 1974-75, I think, when Prabhupada was assembled in Mayapur with his godbrothers, he asked two women to lecture in front of sannyasis, sadhus, babadis, and whatever have you. Why? Why? Because his main interest was to spread the Sankirtan movement, to make an impression, to break barriers. So this certainly is a principle that Prabhupada always used. So why are you going against that? Are you going back to...
You cannot take the exception as the general rule. You're taking the exception.
No, we make these exceptions.
There's an exception to every rule. So Prabhupada, under time and circumstances, he allowed an exception to take place in order to spread the Sankirtan movement. But in principle, and throughout Prabhupada's presence amongst us, we don't see Prabhupada encouraging this fact. We see Prabhupada giving one or two letters to some ladies to encourage them, but then why didn't Prabhupada make it a standing rule that one day a man will give class and one day a woman will give class? Because he supported the general theme of Vedic culture.
So let's just say that these three letters.
There is woman is good, man is good, but when there's the wrong type of association, that's a cause for fall. So let the association be there, but in the proper time and circumstances, and don't take an exception and make it a general rule.
The problem is when you're saying don't make an exception, take an exception. That means that we have made an exception. It's not what Prabhupada meant as an exception. Prabhupada didn't mean to be an exception. We made an exception. So that your argument is wrong there.
Prabhupada supported Lord Chaitanya's statement that just to see the wooden form of a woman is a subtle fall down. For one who's aspiring, so that is
wooden
the general
form doesn't
theme.
Preach.
To hear the voice of a woman, Prabhupada said, is a subtle fall down for a brahmachari sannyasi. So that's a general rule. So the exception in order to preach, Prabhupada allowed, under some public engagements, some woman to come forward and lecture to gain the favor of the general public. But within our temples, Prabhupada did not encourage this.
That's not true. This, you're saying this is to encourage some specific women. It's not true. These three letters, two of them are addressed to men. One is to Malati, so maybe there we could say is to keep you happy. But even in that letter, he gives them the general description, not specific.
So let me ask you, what took place after these letters were written? Did you see a general trend where Prabhupada encouraged the women to preach in the Bhagavatam class in our society?
I see a general
when
trend.
When was this letter written?
1968 to 74.
So,
I see a trend where the sannyasis simply took control of the society, which Prabhupada has made at one time.
Not answering my question. My question is, do we see, after these letters are written, which I say are simply exceptions to the rule, do we see Prabhupada encouraging, do we actually see within any of our ISKCON temples ladies coming forward under Prabhupada's direction to give Bhagavatam class? Is that how Prabhupada asked us to do things? Give me examples beyond these few instances where we see New York and San Francisco and Chicago and London and Paris where women were preaching as a...
No, but this is because the emergence of the sannyasi rule in our society, which was very detrimental...
This is not the point.
That is the point. Sannyasis is stopped and they complained to Prabhupada. What could he do?
Can I join
Bhagavan? Bhagavan? You want to switch? You want to relieve the horses here? And
no, I want to join him.
You want to join two against one? Do you think that's fair?
Maybe someone else can join Maharaj.
Does that violate the audience's sense of fair play?
Someone else can join Maharaj.
Who else wants to join Maharaj? Or should we just give two new men a chance? Who wants to join?
Let Srila sit here.
Srila can battle on Bhagavan's side.
Let Maharaj sit here.
Or do you want... Yeah? You want to fight in Indradumna Maharaj's place? Or do you want to let some questions take place here?
I'd like you on the mood if you analyze what's taking place.
All right. Mm. Partha. Let's talk about what's happened so far.
Well, it seems to me that Vegan was in a strong position most of the time, but they're very surprised. I want to ask one thing over Maharaj, which is if you can clarify this more, but Prabhupada often used say, to know the negatives, for example.
To do what?
To understand the negatives, the authority of the negatives, is as to know the mother, you must test the mother.
The mother is feminine, do you mean?
Huh? Ask the father. You ask the mother.
What's your point?
To know the father, ask the mother.
So what's your point from that? Someone answer that? What is he doing? What kind of argument is that? Someone? Some type of argument we discussed. I'd call it changing the meaning of a term in the middle of an argument. Because the argument is not that you should be talking to women to find out what's true, but rather that the Vedic literature should be approached to know what's true. I just call it switching the meaning of a term in the middle of an argument.
Through the mother.
I understand through the mother, but mother doesn't mean if you want to know the truth of your father, you have to approach your literal mother, and if you want to know the truth of the Vedas, you have to approach your figurative mother, the Vedas. But nowhere does it mean that if we want to know the Vedic truth, we have to approach what we in ISKCON call the mothers. That's a bogus argument.
Why don't we analyze
more feedback?
Like in a circular reasoning and.
Well, I saw some that were interesting. I saw an extension of an argument by you. If we let them give class, we may as well just have indiscriminate association. How do you answer that one, Janik? Well, how do you answer it?
That's not the point.
Someone. No, that's. You can answer any argument that way, but let's get specific here. He says, well, if we're going to let them give class, we might as well have indiscriminate association. Let them cook together, let them sleep together, let them do anything together.
It's not being carried away here. The point is we're talking about classes. We're not talking about, like, just associating together, like a brahmachari sharing their brahmachari ashram with a woman. We're talking about things.
I said that they should cook together. I just think they should be married.
I refuse to accept the extension of my argument. I'm not arguing that we should have indiscriminate association of women. I'm arguing that this kind of association, and specifically this kind, was endorsed by Prabhupada and is therefore legitimate. Not that if we accept, you know, that a horse is an animal, then we have to accept that if a fly is an insect, then we have to accept that horses are insects and trees are insects and everything's an insect. You're extending my argument. I don't see any reason to do so.
At least it seems as though Bhagavan used the same tactic when he said he was trying to force Maharaj to embrace the consequences. Okay, well, the women are going to leave class. You don't want to associate with women at all? Then we'll get them out of the top completely?
That was Bhagavan's. He gave that argument. Yeah. If you're against association, then let's clean the whole thing up. Further art kinds of fallacies you've spotted? Yes?
Well, if they want to give class, then they will want to give the kirtan.
Okay, well, that's called what? Someone gives that argument. What's it called?
Extending
the argument. If we let him give class, we have to let him lead kirtan. If we let him lead kirtan, we have to let him do everything. We have to have temple presidents and GBC men. GBC women, sannyasinis. Extending the argument. It may be a good point to raise, it might be effective, but this is the way to counter it. That's not what I'm advocating. If Prabhupada said do it, I'd say that too. If he said let the women lead kirtan, we'd let them lead kirtan.
It was an interesting Bhagavan was taking the appeal to authority. Bhagavan was taking just Srila Prabhupada that is his real authority, and then Maharaj was saying, no, the real authority is Prabhupada's books. So the argument didn't really seem to
Well, I would point out from this exchange the strength of appeal to authority. If you have an appeal to an authority which is granted to be an authority, your appeal, if it's relevant, and if it's a clearly stated authoritative statement, is very strong. It's very strong. If I say that, oh, anything. If I say that the moon is made of green cheese, and I have 40 astronomers, expert in lunar research, who affirm it, then my argument is very strong. Because especially if they say it's definitely made of green cheese, there's no doubt about it, then I'm quoting authorities within their field relevant to the topic. And my argument is strong. So he's quoting Srila Prabhupada on the topic, in writing, not hearsay.
This is his most difficult. This is very difficult, this challenge.
This is a very difficult. This is a difficult challenge. To oppose an appeal to authority in a movement that rests on authority, particularly, is extremely difficult. How did Maharaj try to do it?
General principle.
Well, he had several ways of doing it. One way, and a very good way, is to attack the authority. Now, of course, you can't attack Prabhupada. You can't say he's not an authority. But how did Maharaj try to do it? Parts of Prabhupada. Okay, and how else?
I'm not. Exceptions.
How else?
Counter-argument.
No. First thing is, he says this is a secondary authority. Yes, we accept Prabhupada's authority, but the letters are not primary authority. The real authority is the books. And letters are less important. Okay? He tries to weaken the authority. Yeah, you've got some letters, but you don't have anything from books. Then he says, and the letters are written to particular people at particular places. To which Vagabond counters, well, you've got 1968 and 1974. That's a pretty wide time range. And when Maharaj says, well, these were all to encourage women, then he's got a letter to a man. Which makes it tough. So it's hard to undermine an appeal to authority, although Maharaj gave it a pretty good shot. And then you can use just indirect arguments. In other words, not challenging the authority, but indicating why the authority under this particular circumstances may not be what we should go by. Yes, maybe you should cross at the green, not at the red, but since we're in since there's just been a huge traffic accident and we're trying to get to the police station, under these circumstances we're not going to halt for the authority. We're going to use our intelligence. So you argue around the authority. Yes?
I thought that Maharaj had a really good standpoint there, that he never looked at Vagabond. Like, he always was talking to the general people as to try to get some people with him. He never talked directly to him. As opposed to Vagabond, was always trying to convince him of a point that he was trying to propose. Maharaj just stands there and just say, I am firm, I know what I'm talking about, you know, and you're not going to make me budge all of this.
Sounds like a good point. I didn't see it, but that's a fact. If you're arguing with someone in public, you're not just arguing with that person, but you're arguing to convince not only him, but your audience also. So if you're out there scouting out sympathetic hearers and checking out not only how your opponent is responding, but how well your points are going over with the audience, then you'll know, hey, at that point, got a few people, let's push on that some more.
It also can has a tendency to weaken your position also.
Yes.
Because it shows the audience that you're not willing to meet your opponent's plans.
That's also there. Both sides. You're just playing to the audience and you're really not tuned in. You're not really tuned in to your opponent, or you're afraid of him. So it's both sides have their pros and cons. Other points?
And maybe you would say something which was done in Poland, because there were lectures given by women, and actually they were just sitting in the back, so the men wouldn't have to glance at them.
Oh, well, if you were going to just cite other evidence, I could give evidence of women who sat right on the seat in the front of the class and gave class. Maybe you were in Europe, you wouldn't be familiar.
But in New York, Jadarani used to give class all the time. There were two.
I've never seen it.
Oh yeah, New York was famous for having the best classes in ISKCON. And at one point. And two devotees used to give the best classes at that time. Me and Jadarani. And of the two of us, she was better. So that could have been cited.
When was that, Maharaj?
That was,
don't take
it. We'll cite that from now on.
1970 something.
Well, Prabhupada used this extension of argument too. That's
yeah.
I used it. I mean, it's here.
You know, when this whole thing was going on, I was thinking circular reasoning, extended argument. It was going through my mind, you know. So this is actually very good training. It's good training for the, because you're in front of the audience. And it's good training, and it's also good for the audience to pick up what's going on. It'd be nice to continue like this the rest of the... if we could have like this every day, the rest of the course.
I think we'll try for it. We'll try to have these arguments going on. I'd make one point in regard to what you just said. And that is that someone asked me the other day, how do you argue, how do you keep all this stuff in your head? Circular arguments and false cause, and you've got all these things going on. How do you even keep your mind on the argument? So it's a kind of practice. When you're learning any skill, at first you learn, you keep different axioms in your head and different instructions and different, you keep your mind on, you know, how you're going to put, how you're pushing the gas pedal or how you're moving the clutch. And then after a while, all the, these things integrate and they become automatic. You no longer think about how many inches to move the steering wheel or how many inches to push on the gas. It becomes a reflex. So similarly, you have to balance it. You keep your listening, you're up with the argument, and at the same time, you've thought about these different kinds of fallacies, you're aware of them, you're giving a little attention to them, and countering them. You know how to balance them out, or how to counteract them. So by practice, by review of the things that we've discussed, these things will become yours. Yes?
Is there a conclusion?
Is there a conclusion? What would you say? Has it reached a conclusion? Yes?
I was just going to say that it seems like the real question was whether or not that they both kind of agreed that women should give class, but to what extent? And even Maharaj acknowledged that, yeah, okay, in certain circumstances they can give class.
Did he acknowledge that?
Yes.
Uh-huh.
And, well, I have one fresh question maybe directed towards Bhagavan.
Okay,
let's... In support of Maharaj's argument.
Give him a run.
If there's a difference, in other words, we actually see somehow or another that there's a difference between male and female, that there actually is a difference, then what is that difference and how does that affect the way you would interpret Prabhupada's instructions here? In other words, I think that's what Maharaj was actually trying to get indirectly.
I didn't follow that.
There's an obvious difference between males and females. A female is like considered an object of sense gratification, and even more, much more than males. In other words, they actually grown up like that. They have a much harder time becoming aware of the fact that they're actually spirit soul. They identify with their body. So, taking that into consideration, how does that affect the way you interpret Srila Prabhupada's instructions?
Well, Prabhupada said someone who is knowledgeable, someone who has developed the ability to think transcendentally, can give a class.
But it's
okay.
You know what to do? It would be nice just to switch roles.
That would be nice. Should we switch roles in the same question next class? That would be very good. We should do that.
I mean, that's otherwise. In other words, it's not a question
of who's doing
biased.
It.
In other words, that doesn't necessarily be how I necessarily feel about this.
Yeah, Bhagavan said, "Do I have to defend it even if I don't believe in it?" So Lord Chaitanya used to do that. He'd establish a point so no one could defeat it so no one could establish it, and then establish it again so no one could defeat it. In his student days, he'd meet with his friends and they'd practice arguing. And that's how it would go. Lord Chaitanya would defeat everybody, whichever side he took. And that's a very standard way of training in argument, is to force the participants to take both sides. Because we don't care which side wins. We're not concerned here with which side wins or which side is stronger. We want to see how well you argue.
It's not a question of false ego. It's a question of actually knowing your stuff.
Yeah. I saw some other arguments I could fight against. One point I saw that you could have pushed, Vagabond. You had this point, do you have opposing letters? Marge wiggled out of it. But if I'd been sitting there, that's the kind of argument I really like. Do you have opposing letters? Marge wiggles out of it. Do you have any opposing letters? Marge says, well, I'm sure if I look, post-dated check, do you have any opposing letters or not? No. So I've got three letters here, you've got zero. So you just consider the position. That's the kind of point that I like those kind of points, I push on them. Why not? One day women give class, and the next day a man. Marge gave that. If you're going to accept this, then why not one day women give class, and the next day men? Why didn't Prabhupada set it up that way? What's your answer? Marge has given this objection. Well, if we're going to take this, that women can give class, why not alternate it? One day a woman, the next day a man, one day, why just sometimes? Why not every other day have a woman give class? What's your answer?
Well, it's right there in the letter. Prabhupada said generally women are less intelligent. So just by that fact alone, men will be giving class much more.
Another answer? Good? Another answer? No one else has another answer?
If they're qualified women, that's in here.
Okay, another answer?
Who said we're arguing that they have to give class every other day?
I have the experience of one day a woman and one day a man with Rochan Prabhu and his wife, Madhu Padyavali. And it worked out very nicely.
That's a heavy one. That's a heavy one. You embrace it, embrace the consequences of your position. Say, why not? In fact, we did it in Vancouver, it was very nice. Or, the way I would argue it is I'd say, well, if Prabhupada had said to do it, I'd do it. If I had a letter here from Prabhupada saying one day a woman should give class, another day a man, then I wouldn't listen to all your arguments about Madhvacharya and Ramanujacharya and this one and that one and so many things. I'd do it. I'd say, well, Prabhupada said it, let's do it. But I'm not arguing for that because it's not what Prabhupada said. I'm just arguing for what Prabhupada said. That's how I'd argue with it. I'll leave you with one last thing because it's about time to end. Then maybe tomorrow we will argue it from the opposite sides. That is that you gave the argument that... let me just think what it was. That it's bad enough already. You know, our classes are already sufficiently weak and people don't like to come. So what to speak of if we let women give classes? So in our last class in Kartik on this same debate, someone raised that same point, but as an argument for the other side.
Right.
That if you let the women give class, the attendance in the Bhagavatam class will increase. Hare Krishna.